All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire basketball edition of the podcast. We had a week off, so I hope you had a good, if you celebrate Christmas, had a good Christmas. MWWire.com, that's our place of business, I guess, where we're doing articles on basketball and other stuff, because this is a great way to introduce the show. Hey, Jeremy Moss with Eli Betker, and conference play is here. Conference play.
We are back with some league play, but first off, I need to ask you about that that knife set you get. Are you going to cut up some ham in the meantime? No?
Oh, boy. We're going to start off with that. We can do that. For Christmas, because ham is a holiday dish, I guess, for most people. Did you have ham during the Christmas break?
No, we always have Mexican food for Christmas.
Oh, I need to invite to your house for this.
There we go.
I did have Chinese food on Christmas Day because I didn't want anything else to add. I'm like, I'm bored, and drove around. I found two places open, Chinese food or the small like burrito joints. I'm like, I'll go for some Chinese food, which was jammed packed. But people have listened to this podcast, football, basketball, followed me on Twitter. I'm not a huge fan of ham. I'm not a huge fan of the ham. I like bacon, which is part of ham. I like pork chop, is okay. I like ribs. That's part of a pig, right? That's kind of the same thing. I'm not a huge fan of, I don't like the ham. And so I made a joke. Two reasons I made a joke. A family member brought over ham and pineapple, which is usually, I like that better than most.
Together?
You never had glazed pineapple, glazed ham with pineapple?
Never. I've never even heard of that.
You cannot tell me you like ham if you've never had that before. That's like the only type of ham I'll tolerate. That's, hey, that's not bad.
With pineapple?
It's
is this a Texas thing?
No. It's a glazed, huh. You never had a glazed pineapple ham?
No.
It's actually not bad, except for the one I had this past weekend.
Oh, no.
And I didn't say anything because this is my wife's sister, and she whispers to me, this ham's not any good. I'm like, yes, victory. So I took to Twitter and said, hey, I got somebody convinced about not liking ham. And I was joking because I knew some people would react to it just because. Mm-hmm. But then I guess like every year since I've been married, I guess we get like my wife's parents give like all their kids or whatever couples like, hey, here's a knife or something from Cutco. Like eventually I'll have a set. I don't know when, or maybe I do have a set, but I mean, she's like, make a joke about ham. Like, hey, here's my, because it's a carving knife. And so I'm like, hey, here's what I can do to carve some ham.
Man.
But it's
I
like,
I don't know if I'll live to see that day.
I will eat a ham sandwich if that's kind of weird, like from lunch meat. Is that acceptable?
Yeah, it's acceptable.
But I just,
I can't see pineapple and ham together though. That just doesn't seem right to me.
It's like pineapple pizza, is that what you're getting at?
No, I can't tolerate pineapple and pizza either.
Okay, Canadian bacon. Oh, we'll look it up. We'll put a poll or something on Twitter because I'm pretty sure I've had it in, I've lived in multiple states. In every state, it's a thing. So it's not just being from Texas or Houston or when I used to live in New York for a while. It's like, no, it's a pineapple glazed ham is a thing. You've never heard of it?
Never heard of it.
Oh my goodness. Let me just do a quick Google search here. Pineapple glazed ham, it pops up. Let's see how popular it is. Okay, maybe this one for Food Network. When you look at this first, don't look at the one with the cherry on top of the pineapple on the ham, because that's terrible.
Now we're adding cherries to it, too?
Well, I put in pineapple glazed ham. First thing that pops up on Google, and we'll get to basketball shortly, folks. Eventually, we will. It goes, place a cherry in the center of each pineapple ring and secure the clove or toothpick in a small bowl. Combine the brown sugar, mustard, and just enough reserved pineapple juice to make a thick glaze. I don't know where the cherries come from. I've seen it before, but it's a good thing. You just glaze it with, it's like taking the juice and glazing with it. That's basically what it is. Like brown sugar and stuff too. So
what it type, looks cool.
What type of ham do you have? Just plain ham?
Yeah. Nothing. Nope. Just nothing too crazy. So I especially don't put pineapple or cherries on it.
Interesting. I don't know. You never heard of pineapple? Whatever. It's okay. Yeah, but
I'll have to explore it at some point.
Give it a try. I'll just say this. When I see people at the Honey Baked Ham store, I'm like, suckers. What are you doing? Like, seriously, Mexican food, have ribs, have something good. Because I said this a million times, and I hope maybe people agree with me or not, but there's a ton of better food than ham, right?
It's like ham is similar to a good bowl of soup. Like, no one's going to go tell their friends about this awesome soup they had. You know?
Unless it's clam chowder.
It's decent ham.
Clam chowder.
Okay, yeah.
Clam chowder or chili, you can brag about, but if it's like a good chicken noodle, no, sorry.
Minestrone.
What if I don't like soup? Is that okay as well, or is that a strike against me too?
There are some bad soups, so I'll probably give you a pass for that.
I like chili, but yeah, okay. So what type of Mexican food do you have? Do you make tacos, burritos, carnitas?
We have like Mexican pizza tortilla things. So and then we have.
Wait. Describe that better, because a Mexican tortilla pizza thing.
Yeah.
Do you mean a tostada?
No, I mean it's basically a Mexican pizza. So you just have your big tortilla. You have meat, lettuce, tomato, onion, cheese, salsa, hot sauce, all that stuff on it.
Just like a flatbread, then, but a soft shell.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And then an enchilada casserole of sorts, and beans and rice and all that kind of stuff. So it's good. But that's been a family tradition for decades and decades and decades, and we just decided to stick with it. So we don't need the big ham dinner for Christmas. That's kind of overrated.
I tell people, no, it's like... I just like good food. I like flavorful food, and that ham is whatever. It's ham. That's the best way to describe it, right? It's ham.
It's ham. Yeah, it's fine.
All right, let's get to basketball now. We don't need more food talk. So let's get on to the latter tale of non-conference play, because non-conference play is dying. And I guess let's go back to the Gonzaga game, because in our last show, we talked about Gonzaga, San Diego State figured, oh, the Zags are probably going to win because they're the better team. But San Diego State, they end up winning the game. If you didn't see it, I don't know, find some highlights. It's a week old. You should find it by now. You should have heard about it. 72-70, and they nearly blew it as well. Because they had almost a 10-point lead late in the game, like about with a couple minutes left, where they were pretty much in control, and then they decided to pull an Aztec and almost lose it.
Yeah, I mean, if it were to happen, it wasn't going to happen easily. And honestly, I didn't give San Diego State much of a shot at all. I mean, they came off... They're fresh off a home loss to a California team that's one of the worst in the Pac-12. Had 12 days off before they match up with Gonzaga, the top 15 team. But they made Gonzaga look terrible. Some of their stars couldn't hit a bucket. Josh Perkins was 1 of 7 with 6 turnovers. Killian Tilly had 4 turnovers. They just frustrated Gonzaga. They shot poorly from the field. And they really started off pretty hot from the field themselves, which is not something that we're come to expect against a pretty solid Gonzaga team, but they knocked down a number of threes to keep them into it, and they just controlled the game throughout, and there wasn't a point through the whole entire 40 minutes that Gonzaga gained the lead. So SDSU led throughout. They nearly choked it away at the end, but had just enough in the tank to pull off a pretty big upset.
Yeah, so it's a big deal. They were number 12 at the time, and Aztecs are... I'm going to call... They're the team that's going to confuse everybody this year. I can already see it. Because they played... Arizona State was way better than we thought were back in, what, game two? They got rushed out of the gym second half. They lose to Washington State, who's weird. Beat George. Like, they've up or down. Then they have the Cal game, who... What's Cal's record? Have they won 4 games yet this year? If that... They lost to Chaminade, which we mentioned a million times.
They're 6-7. Yeah, they lost to Chaminade.
Chaminade, St. Mary's, that's fine. Central Arkansas, Portland State. UC
Riverside, Portland State, yeah.
And so I knew at that point, they have talent, but they're not going to have consistent talent, if that makes sense. Because they have, who is it, Mitchell, who scored, people are freaking out when he scored a 31 points against, was it San Diego Community Christian College, whatever it was?
Or the like.
Something like that, but he had what? Is that where he had 31 points? What game was that where he had 31 points? Was that... No, that's a different game.
It wasn't that one, but he has broken out a couple of times. He's a good freshman, solid shooter. That was against Eastern Illinois. He had 31, including 7-11 from deep. But they were inconsistent last year, and then you lose your Hall of Fame coach, and even whenever you have a first-year head coach, I don't care who it is, your team isn't going to be... super consistent. So maybe we weren't expecting it to be as rocky as it is, and they followed up that Gonzaga win with the road loss to Wyoming in a game that they really weren't that competitive. So you never really have the same guys playing well and playing with each other on the same night. So it's just kind of a confusing team, and one that they have the talent to beat Nevada or Boise or UNLV on any given night, and then they can also slip up against a team like Fresno or Colorado State or Wyoming, as they did on Wednesday. So it'll be tough to see where this team ends up, but They have the potential of winning the conference. They have the potential of finishing 6th or 7th. So we just don't really know.
I was about to say, like, they were predicted second in the media poll. I think they did. They get what, a couple first place votes, I believe. But they have they do have talent. Like, here's a couple things too. Yes, you say they slip up versus Wyoming, but wasn't Wyoming favored in that game?
I believe they were. I'm looking at KenPom right now, and actually KenPom had San Diego State winning by 3. Okay, so, but
toss up essentially.
Right, you're not going to go into Wyoming and run them out of the building. They're too solid at home to do that.
Yeah, and also, like, I was looking at with John Rostings, we talked about this before. And then you also got, like, Aaron Torres, who covers the Mountain West over at The Athletic, like a weekly notebook or whatever. So Rostings mentioned, 6 days ago, Aztecs beat Gonzaga. Tonight they lost at Wyoming. Whatever, Peacock today, Feather, Duster tomorrow. Lame joke, whatever. Here's the thing, though. We've mentioned this before. I've seen this for years. Going on the road, who cares if it's Wyoming, but going on the road anywhere in the conference, it's a tough place to play. You have the Pit, you have the Spectrum, you have Boise's gotten better, going to Viejas, going to Thomas and Mack, going anywhere in the conference, like, even the lowest place in the conference, what, probably Fresno and San Jose State are probably the easiest road trips, but even Fresno State's good, and with San Jose has one or two guys, but Wyoming's also at 7,200 feet. You're at a mile above. You're going to be well above a mile. And also, Wyoming's a pretty good basketball team as well. For this,
they're not a bad team, and they also play at a style that's really difficult to counter if you're not on it, because they shoot a ton of threes, they run at a quick tempo, and they'll have nights like they did against San Diego State where they drilled 10, 11, 12 threes. They were 12 of 29 from deep last night. And that's something that San Jose State is not used to, but it just happens, especially on the road in Mountain West, because this is probably the toughest conference to get road wins in the entire nation, and we saw that on the very first night. And also, home teams went 4-1 yesterday in the first night of the conference play, so that's what we've come to expect.
We should maybe, in off-season, because it'll take a while, look at some sort of historical road-home splits between like all the conferences. I know it's not exclusive to the Mountain West, but we're more closely. But we've seen past couple years, like what was it? San Jose State beat at San Diego State. Wasn't that the case last year? Or Fresno at San Diego State? Or everybody getting it's always tough to go anywhere to beat these teams. Like, it doesn't matter where you're at, whether it's the altitude or how to, because it's not easy to get to Laramie. Because there was a couple years ago, Aztecs like, yeah, we got a private jet or charter jet. They ran out of gas partway through somehow and had to land in some. It's like, how does this happen? You charter a jet. It's like, come on. You don't have enough gas fuel to get somewhere. And so it's like, it's just difficult. Like, to get to Fort Collins, it's not terribly hard, but it's there's an airport nearby, but you got to drive a little bit. To get to Laramie, go to Denver or Colorado Springs, drive an hour plus. Going to San Jose is not difficult. Fresno, you have to drive in somewhere. Going to Logan, you fly into Salt Lake, you drive in an hour plus. Or maybe you go to the Ogden Airport, you're still 35 minutes away from the university, so it's hard to get there. You got all this altitude, specifically if you're coming from like UNLV or San Diego, specifically a 6,000 foot swing almost. And so, but also give them credit, there's a good team. Wyoming's a good team. Like, Hayden Dalton had what, 36 and 15? He had 2 blocks as well and 5 assists. They're a great, good team. But like with Aztecs, I think you're right, like they're a team that could, I wouldn't be surprised if they win at Nevada but then lose like at Fresno, you know what I mean? Not that Fresno's bad, but like lose to a team that they probably shouldn't have. Like, they probably shouldn't have lost to Wyoming. But the margin of victory is concerning, because this basically, it's almost the same thing that happened versus Arizona State. They're within it or leading and close to halftime, and then get blown out in the second half because they try to check it from 3-point range because they're down. And Wyoming made almost half their threes, so it's like, well, that's what you get. Turnovers are about the same. So it's just Wyoming, what is it? Not that they have better legs, maybe, but they're used to playing that height, and they play a different type of offense where this Aztec defense we've known and loved forever is not as good as it used to be. So there you go.
Yeah, it's true. And it is. I was going to bring that up. It was a very similar result as the Arizona State game, because San Diego State and Wyoming played it close in the first half, and then Wyoming just went off in the final 20 minutes. And going back to your little tidbit there on winning on the road, you could probably make the case that geographically speaking, the Mountain West Conference is probably the most difficult conference to play in. I mean, maybe the American, because I know there are teams that stretch into middle America all the way up to the upper east.
The WAC. It's the WAC.
Whack? Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Chicago Southern, and all in the Bay Area.
In South Texas.
That is tough. But, I mean, you have teams that are in the Bay Area. You have teams that are up in Boise, teams in the mountains, all the way over to Albuquerque. So it's not easy at all.
Well, and the arenas, too. It's like where they're at, like the Pit. It's like, it's yeah, the name and all that stuff. But it's also, like I said, the good teams. You're right. Geography is different from, but it's just that's part of it too. It's probably top three because of distance and what do you got? Distance, like geographical landscape, weather, and I guess that could be two spots by like getting to it and like I mentioned altitude and stuff. But that's why I say with the Air Force, man, go 20 deep and rotate five guys in every media timeout, rotate a new set of guys, just run them out of the gym. The cadets should be able to do that, but. Let's get to Nevada real quick because they are the next team that they were ranked at one point. I think they got 1 point in the most recent one of the polls, AP coaches poll. But then they lose to a San Francisco team down in Vegas, which San Francisco's not very good. Come on, how do they lose to San Francisco?
It's definitely a game that Nevada just should not lose. San Francisco is probably not a top 150 team in the conference. The Wolfpack started off this game super slow. They trailed 35-26 at the half and just seemed out of it. They did pull and make it close in the end. They did lead by four with less than or around 6 minutes left, but just couldn't seal the deal. And I mean, sometimes with a team like this, you're going to have a lot of guys that run ISO plays. They just spread it out and see what they can do with the ball. And sometimes the shots don't fall, and they didn't against San Francisco. But it's just hard to fathom that Nevada can only score 64 points against this San Francisco team. And I know that San Francisco is pretty solid defensively, but I mean, Nevada just has no business losing this game. And even though it's a neutral atmosphere, the game was played in Las Vegas, so it's in the home state for Nevada. And that's going to be a loss that I don't want to say completely takes them out of the at-large hopes, but man, like, they're holding on by a thread right now.
Yeah, because losing to TCU or Texas Tech, that's one thing. Those are going to be, what, tops? I'm looking at Ken Pom here, but top, what, 50? Somewhere in that range. Texas Tech is 10th in Ken Pom. TCU is sitting at 24. So they're going to be quality games, opponents. And then with the new RPI set up, both were away from home, neutral. So that kind of tweaks it a little bit for if those two teams drop, which they probably won't because they're now in conference play themselves. But San Francisco has no place to go but down, essentially, even if they keep winning, because they're in the West Coast Conference. You have St. Mary's has dropped a bit. Gonzaga's good, but not great. Maybe BYU will become something because they have 11-2 and they're a top 60 team at the moment. But then you're playing teams like, what, Pepperdine, and they're like, what, 298 teams like that who are down to the 300 range of the West Coast Conference. So it's not that you lose to them, but you lose to a team like in a league where half the league is worse than 200 at the moment right now. I'm looking right here at Ken Pom. 2, 3, 5 of the teams are 200 or worse than Ken Pom.
The RPI will only drop, and yeah. San Francisco already has losses to, it looks like, four teams that are sub-100 Ken Pom teams right now, including Long Beach State at 236 and Duquesne at 209. So, I mean, we can beat the dead horse, but this loss is going to be one that, I mean, prototypical bubble teams in the past from mid-major conferences have been in this similar scenario as Nevada, where they have their quality win probably isn't against power conference team, which it isn't in Nevada's case in Rhode Island. Probably have one bad loss in non-conference play, and then they'll finish league play with a solid record. But it's too bad, because if Nevada could have taken one of those games against Texas Tech or TCU, they would probably be sitting in really good shape, even with that loss to San Francisco.
Yeah, because after the loss, like I put in piece two, mentioning the same thing with San Diego State, their at-large chances are smoke. And they probably already were, because the Cal loss is just abysmal, even though that RPI might rise just because they're in the Pac-12. But look, San Francisco was the 23rd. Lenardi came out with his new bracket. They have them as 8th seed. Boise is a 6th team out. So it's like, 8 seed for a team that went 25 games. Like, well, that's kind of crappy. Just because they're... And the conference is better, but you mentioned... You put out a tweet, what, a week ago. Like, there's, what, 5 teams in the top 80 Ken Pom? Is that something... Somewhere in that range, what you mentioned last week?
Yeah, top 70 right now.
Was that the cases last week as well? Or earlier in the week?
Yes, it was.
Okay, so you have 3... It's now changed to 4 because Fresno's down to 82 because they lost to... Who did they lose to? UNLV?
They
Nevada. Nevada, yeah.
Handled by Nevada.
Mm-hmm. So before that, you mentioned, and I looked up in there, I retweeted, like, that was also the last time, because you mentioned the years. 2013 was the last time they had five top 70 KenPom teams. That's also the last time there's five teams in the NCAA tournament within the conference. I'm just saying, but it's probably not going to happen, but this is probably the case could be made. This is the strongest this league's been in a while. It's just that I know the committee shouldn't look at past results, but that just happens. It's like it shouldn't be the case, but like, oh, they only got one team in last year before. They lose in the first round to whether it be Utah and Fresno or with the last year to Iowa State and Nevada. Do you think the league's even that much better? Because, like, I'm looking at another tweet from Rossi. He's like, yeah, UNLV has a chance for at-large, he mentioned, but they almost had to be perfect. And so it's like...
Well, I guess I have two optimistic ways to look at this, and I'll be hammering this home the next 2 months. Good. But the first thing is the league is deeper than it has been in previous years, and we've seen that because we have probably 4 to 5 teams that can win the regular season title and actually be legitimate top 50 teams. So it's deeper at the top, and it's not nearly as bad at the bottom. And I think, I mean, like you said, it's probably the strongest the league has been since 2013, and it still doesn't have probably one at-large worthy resume right now.
Yeesh.
To be brutally honest, I don't think you could make a case for Nevada or Boise State or San Diego State or any of those teams when you compare them next to Power Conference teams. But at the same time, I think we need to keep an eye on Nevada because although they had that San Francisco loss, they don't have that big quality win. They are ranked 29th in KenPom. And I did some research last year looking at Wichita State, and no mid-major ranked 22nd or better has ever missed the NCAA tournament. So if they're able to just cruise through conference play and blow out some teams and improve their KenPom standing, and I know that's not the prototypical route of getting into the NCAA tournament, but if they're able to be between 20 and 25 in the metrics averages come Selection Sunday and their only bad losses is San Francisco, I think you probably have a case to be made that Nevada belongs in the tournament field. But at the same time, you can't really make that case for the other teams in the conference because Boise State, UNLV, San Diego State, Fresno State, all those teams are around 60 or worse, and there's no way that they're going to go up 30 spots even if they go undefeated in a conference play. So, I mean, best case, probably Nevada cruising through conference play and then losing the semifinal to a team that gets that automatic bid. But that's a lot to ask because they're just so busy at the top, and there's a chance that Nevada could slip up against Boise or UNLV or maybe one of the weaker teams just because, as we mentioned, it's so hard to win on the road.
So let me go back to one more thing. We'll get to more games, both. Rod Rossi, again, who mentioned, like, he goes, this is a couple hours ago as of Thursday. He says UNLV could have the best chance of Mountain West team getting at-large bid. His reasoning, because they have no bad losses. That might be the case, but what good wins do they have? You gotta have wins. You can't just You can't have. Yeah, you lose to UNI, who's good, but you lose to Arizona, who's not as good as it used to be. But yeah, what's Utah? They'll finish they're probably the third or fourth best team in the Pac-12. Northern Iowa might win the Missouri Valley, but Illinois is terrible. It's like, what are you gonna do? It's like, well, not terrible, but they're not gonna win the Big Ten. I don't think this year. They're not what they used to be. They're about 100 RPI at the moment, I think, last time I checked, but I don't think that tweet's accurate because, yeah, they can navigate the Mountain West, and like you said, they're 66 at the moment in KenPom. They're going to be top 30 to have a good chance. They're probably not going to get a top 30 team by the end of the season, right?
I mean, Nevada, that's about it, though.
Yeah,
they get two shots against Nevada.
So, I mean, like, San Diego State's still ranked higher than them. And so let me ask you this real quick because you look at KenPom more closely than I do. What does it exactly include, really? Like, I assume Nevada's higher partly because of who they have returning and things like that. But since we're 10, 15 games into the season, how could that really change for, like, UNLV or anybody to move up? Like, what could UNLV do to get up besides just win?
So it all comes down to margin of victory, essentially, because what KenPom is a predictive system. So that means it takes your past results and then uses those results to predict what the future results will be. So say UNLV is favored by 3 against Boise State. Let's just go with what actually it is right now. UNLV is favored by 2 at home against Boise State on Saturday. So if they do win that game by two, they would hold their place in KenPom. But it, say if they have an excellent night, they win that game by 20, their predictive efficiency margin, which is what KenPom is based off of, how many points you score and allow per 100 possessions, that will increase because UNLV performed better than expected. So, like I said with Nevada, with these top teams, if you want to see an increase in KenPom and see it as dramatic as possible, you just have to blow out the teams that, that you're expected to beat and also win against the teams you're expected to lose, because the system predicts how good you will be in the future. So basically, KenPom is predicting that UNLV at season's end will be the 66th best team. So if they're able to outperform expectations, then that number will continue to rise, or I guess decrease, because you want to see your ranking decrease. But yeah, just win as many games as possible and blow out as many teams as possible to improve your margin, because it all comes down to how many points you're scoring and allowing per 100 possessions.
So basically, you're competing against yourself, right?
Exactly, yeah. So if you're favored by two against Boise, you need to win that game by more than 2 points to even see a rise in your efficiency margin. So if you win that game by one, it really does you no good in terms of KenPom.
Okay. So that's the thing. It's like, who has good wins? Like, the best win is clearly Gonzaga, but it helps nobody because Aztecs aren't getting in at large. What do you have an idea? Like, I know you don't have the whole schedule, but what's the next best win? Is it beating Utah by UNLV? Has it, I don't know.
It'll probably end up being Boise State win on the road against Oregon.
Ah, that's right, Oregon, yeah.
And then if not, then maybe Rhode Island's win at home against, Nevada's win at home against Rhode Island. But, okay, like, those are, on the surface, those look like solid quality wins, but I mean, it doesn't push the needle on Selection Sunday, because you have teams that are 8th, 9th, or 10th in the Big 12 that'll end up having 4 or 5 top 25 wins, and that just doesn't stack up for the Mountain West. Yeah, so
here you go real quick. Rhode Island, 45. Yeah. Oregon, 48. Utah, 58.
Okay.
So those are, okay, whatever. You know, I mean, if you beat TCU, that's a top 10 win, or top 20 win, but whatever, top 25 actually. So even SMU has 26. Like SMU's 26. So like mm-hmm. the chances are, had San Diego State able to play St. Mary's, they're 31 at the moment somehow. I don't know how, but they're 31.
I don't know. And I mean, we can go back to the schedules and all that, which is obviously a big key to the puzzle for the league, because you only have so many quality wins as you have quality win chances. But the Mountain West has had their opportunities. If UNLV was able to pull off those wins against Northern Iowa and Arizona, and mind you, both were in overtime, so they obviously had a chance to win those games, mm-hmm. they'd for sure be a top 20 team right now, and they'd be in a perfect spot for an at-large bid. Nevada, if they wouldn't have lost that game to San Francisco, and if they would have just won one of two against Texas Tech or TCU, which they lost by a combined 10 points, they would be in much better at-large shape. So you can say what you want about schedules, and I know a lot of people have told me, like, well, maybe these teams should start scheduling up more. And trust me, they're trying, because they want to get as many quality wins as possible. But I've looked at how this conference has done against top 30, top 50 teams over the last 2 years, and, I mean, they've come up short in at least 90% of the games. So it's tough love, but they pretty much have only themselves to blame for the position that they're in right now. And when you're a mid-major, you have limited quality win chances because you just don't have the opportunities once you enter January and you have to play teams in your league.
Yeah, because what could have changed a little bit is that, like, I know once you get league play, unless you're in a great league, your numbers aren't, the fluctuation, we know it's going to be, they're mostly all going to drop, unless with KenPom, how it's predictive and you outperform what you're supposed to do. And so what could have helped the league overall is with, like, Aztecs beating Cal. Especially UNLV, they beat those two teams, or split, or even Nevada splits. Nevada could be possibly top 15 had they, like you said, beat San Francisco and beat either Texas Tech or TCU. They'd be that much closer to the top. And so had UNLV won those games, say they're 32, that helps everybody out because they're already that high. They're not going to rise from 66 to 30. So if you had two top 40 teams, that's going to help the whole league overall, whether it's UNLV Nevada or say Fresno, or most teams, if you get to play those teams twice, you have four chances against the top 35 teams. Now there's just the one chance versus Nevada. And so that could have helped everybody, whether who's close. Like, Boise's going to be close. Wyoming, probably not, because they have like those two bad losses to Northern Colorado and Denver. But my point is, everybody should understand, is that had UNLV done a little bit better, even Nevada, it would help the teams like Boise or Fresno, who are in that 50 range, to help them jump up to maybe get in that 40 to 30 range. And so now, like, yeah, they got a bunch of top 70 teams. Two things will happen. Probably they either beat up on each other, which means nobody's getting in but one, maybe two, or one team's going to rise above, and hopefully it's not just Nevada to get in. And so you just hope that some team gets high. Because I think UNLV can get at large, but I don't know. It's because, like, I put out the new numbers again today. I haven't been doing this daily, but I've been close to daily, so I apologize for that being every day. But, like, when you look at, there's a new RPI and the grouping and people using BPI and Sagarin and stuff. But, like, Boise has a, let me ask you this real quick, Eli. Is there a number they're going to take into consideration more than others now that they can use all these other statistics and measurements?
So what they use for metrics on the team sheets, which is what the committee uses in the committee rooms when they select the teams, they have what you've done against certain RPI categories, like we've said, like with Category 1 teams, Category 2, and so on. So that is paramount. I mean, that's the number one thing. But then you have your metrics average, which is the average of KenPom, BPI, and Sagarin, which is also important, and it has gained in importance over the last few years. But there isn't one that carries more weight than the others. I know, okay, KenPom is definitely the most prominent of the three, but it when you see it on the team sheet, it's just a combination of the three that's in one average. So when you might be 20, 20, and 25, but overall your average is going to be about 22, 23. So, yeah, it's just an average of the three. So I wouldn't put too much stock in a certain one.
I was just curious. I'm looking at those three here. Like, Sagarin seems to like the Mountain West more than others, because this is as of Wednesday night, so as after league play, and every other play, obviously, Wednesday. But they have Boise 37, Nevada 23, San Diego State still top 40 team at 34 after that loss to Wyoming, and then they have 36 for UNLV. And so they like the, but again, there's the average, because then you have the opposite way where New Mexico is not that they're going to make a difference, but there's a 50-point difference almost between Sagarin and BPI. And then, like, 15 between them and KenPom, or San Diego State's a 61 KenPom team, but 34 in Sagarin. So, and also, you mentioned the group one. There's only one at the whole conference. Nevada has the only group one victory, and that's the home win versus Rhode Island.
And that's exactly why they're in the position that they're in right now. Because, I mean, they haven't had a ton of opportunities, but they have had their fair chances against some of the quality win opponents. So, yeah, it's too bad. But that's just the state of the conference right now.
Yeah, it's like, but they have, like you said, they have the chances, because overall, every team has played, except for Air Force and San Jose State, everybody's played at least one Group 1 team. CSU's played 4, Nevada 3, New Mexico 3, and this could fluctuate a little bit because it's obviously rotates, but when league play, there could be a few more, but every team has at least one or two chances. Only Wyoming has one chance, and San Diego State.
But, wait, no, I mean, wait, Aztec, this is why.
Oh, maybe I made an error.
Yeah, go for it.
I think I made a little error when I did this. I'm pretty sure Gonzaga should be a Group 1 victory. Maybe that's a mistake, but, or they will be. I don't know. Maybe their RPI is not that good for some reason at the moment, because it was a home game. So that makes it a bit lower.
Mm-hmm. And just the point that I was going to make is that I know we get flack for saying games are must wins in like the first full week of the season. I mean, in terms of, I mean, we had Nevada, Rhode Island the first Monday of the year. But when it comes down to it, the games that we have in November and December, they are just as, if not more important than what you do in January and February, especially for the mid-major conferences, because you just don't have the opportunities once you enter league play to pick up some of these wins. So,
yeah.
I mean, UNLV against Northern Iowa and Arizona, if they could get one of those, if Nevada could have gotten one against TCU or Texas Tech, it completely changes the complexion of the rest of the season. And that's why we label some of these games as must wins or almost must wins, even though it's maybe the first week of December. Because once you reach March, if your team sheet is blank of Category 1 and Category 2 wins, then, I mean, you're probably headed to the NIT.
Yeah, it's like, I know they take into consideration last 10. I guess you're playing hot. Like, oh, maybe they're a better team. But within these conferences, it's like you have your opportunities for bigger wins. Yeah, I could say they're more important. Like, I could say, like, I'm not naive to say Rhode Island's more important than playing San Jose State for Nevada. It clearly is. Or playing Oregon for Boise State's more important than playing even Wyoming. Just because your chances to improve your stock are greater against better teams. And so, like, week one, game two, game five, those matter, like I said, if not, or more. But let's get to some stuff we did during the break. So we didn't have a show last week. You and I and everybody else put together our we tried to shorten the name here, but our basically top 10 players from non-conference play. That's a simple way to put it, right?
Yeah, that came out pretty well.
Better than what we tried to at the end of last show, which was...
Oh, it was tough, yeah.
It was a mouthful. Oh, I must not have that on our... I didn't pin that. But we did our top players in the conference. Here we go. And we have over-under win totals. We didn't get to either, but that's okay. So most outstanding player. Right now, it's Brandon McCoy. He's playing the best by quite a bit. What's he...
There wasn't even really a second option because all of the staff members chose McCoy. So he was a runaway favorite, and he has been the best player in the conference so far.
I guess if you're going with some... Great videos are playing. Hold on. Don't you love that autoplay? But the next closest guy was Caleb Martin from Nevada? That's about it. Who's next closest in any way in our list here, I believe.
Yeah, we had Caleb Martin, Deshaun Taylor, Chandler Hutchison, and Hayden Dalton rounding out the first team. And we go back to the Hayden Dalton performance last night.
Oh, boy.
He went off, so... He'll probably take a bit of a rise after that really nice performance. He'll probably be the player of the week on Monday. But, a lot of good individual performances to the first 2 months of the season. But I think Brandon McCoy, even though he comes in as a five-star and a projected lottery pick, he has exceeded expectations to just about everyone's expectations so far. He's been excellent, recorded a number of 20 and 10s, been the go-to guy for UNLV, so... we probably didn't expect a lot in terms of box score production, but he's been just fantastic so far.
And I think he's fourth in blocks per game as well, like about 1.5 or 1.6. Let's roll this into what I'm starting to. I finally, after I teased it for the whole season, preseason, I'm like, okay, I got to do it finally. Got to get this article going about, I'm going to put something together, which I started to already. Who's going to be the player of the year? And I piggybacked off our article we did with all the staff voting, but... As of right now, it's Brandon McCoy, and I'm going to kind of look at something historically, like every week, or close to every week. So if you see my last article, it was basically looking at, hey, who's won the Player of the Year since the league formed back in 1998? So it's 20, basically it's almost 20 years. There actually are 20 players because two co-players of the year. Believe it or not, folks, there was an Air Force player who won Player of the Year at one point. So that's
what a time.
Yeah, Nick Welch. When they won the conference but lost in the first round of the Mountain West tournament. So I went through all those. So here's what I found out. Because if McCoy's going to win it, which may or may not happen just because, who knows, it's still early, obviously. Here's the thing. If you want to be a center, I know you looked at this list, but there's only been three centers ever who's won this award. You've had... three. You have Nick Welch, Air Force, the one Air Force guy. You have Hafa Araujo from BYU. Or I'll say Raphael, but it's really Hafa. That's what his real name goes by. Or Luke Neville of Utah. And Andrew Bogut, technically a power forward, but he's kind of a center. Or I guess he's both, but so it's been four. But the most common position is shooting guard, because if you look at the past decade, essentially, you have Jamal Franklin, Kendall Williams, Xavier Thames, Derek Marks, Marvell Harrison, Gene Clavel. Clavel. So I went through all this stuff. You have to be a guard typically to win, so that's out of the norm. And also, which is very interesting, which I figured most people know, you got to be in a good team to win the league, right? To win your league champion or league player of the year. You got to be good on a good team as well. But what I found out, you had to be first, or every guy but two was first or second.
And that's been the case, I mean, recently too. I Marvell Harris wasn't first or second, but for the most part,
regular season.
He was?
Yeah, regular season. Fresno State was, they were second place that year, weren't they?
I thought they were third and fourth, but they did win the conference tournament.
Maybe that was the other team, because there was only, it's very rare. I'm going to check right now, because I don't want to make an error in that piece, but it's possible. It took me a while to look up everything, but they were second, 13-5.
Interesting.
So you'd be first or second. The one outlier, which was nuts and crazy, is, and I'm going to do a piece on this next week on this guy, I think, Reuben Douglas, 2002-2003. I already told you this, Eli, but I'll let everybody else know it clearly. New Mexico was not good that year. And when I mean not good, He's the only player to finish outside the top three first team to and win the award. They were seventh place in the conference.
What was their overall win-loss in conference win-loss, if you have it on
Yeah, I'm pulled up right now. They were 4-10.
Oof.
10-18 overall. But the reason he won the award is because Douglas averaged 28 points per game.
The man can put the ball in the bucket. That's crazy, though, because, I mean, you've seen this with your data. For a team to finish 4-10 in conference play and still have the Player of the Year award, I mean, Jimmer Fredette, I'm looking at right now, he had 28.9 points per game his senior season, the year he gathered in just about every Player of the Year award you
Naismith
can imagine.
And all that, yeah.
But that team was also fantastic. So that's
impressive.
Yeah,
they were Final
Fours.
Yeah, if not for Brandon Davies getting busted for having sex, they'd been a Final Four team.
Yeah, that was an odd one.
It was, but also that year, beat out Kawhi Leonard. So
true.
But the other end of spectrum, real quick, because I'm going to do this every week, but I found out some fascinating stuff. So Alex Hansen won the award in 2002-2003, I believe that was the year. I found multiple players, him included. No, sorry, Alex Jensen, not Hansen. I don't know where I got that. 99. I was looking at somebody else. 13 points per game was Player of the Year. I was going through all the stats to average them out, which I'll do another time, but I found at least three or four players who didn't even average 15 points per game who are Player of the Year, just because they're considered the best player on the best team.
Which season was it that, what did you say, Jensen that won the...
99-2000.
99 or 2000. I'm curious now what the other players did that season.
That's what I'm going to look at, too. That's what I'm going to find out. Like, what did... When Douglas won it, what did other players do? What did this guy do? Like, he was average... No, sorry. Yeah, he was 13.1 points per game. 7.5 rebounds and 3 assists. And he was... he's a good shooter, 61% from the field.
So it looks like you did have 8 players that were qualified. So a qualified tentatively means, like, 20 games or more. Mm-hmm. That had 15 or more points per game. So that is interesting that the award went to a guy that averages 13 points per game.
Well, they won the conference that year.
So I guess what would be your initial takeaway then for this season? Like what we've seen so far from some of the guys we mentioned on the first team or maybe even the second team, how do you think what you found in the past could reflect maybe what ends up happening in this year's Player of the Year voting?
It's still early, but like I said... clearly, the number one option is being number one criteria, in my opinion, is being first or second in the conference, which leads me to believe like Caleb Martin could be in the mix. Clearly, not just on talent, but like the outside criteria. I don't know if UNLV will get there, but Brandon McCoy, UNLV is clearly a top four team at worst. I would say right now, is that fair to say for them?
Definitely.
So I would say so. If we look at right now, so let's just go by KenPom real quick. We'll go to the top teams right there. So if we go. I know it's not exact science, but Nevada, I'll give you Caleb Martin, Chandler Hutchinson. I don't think anybody from San Diego State, but then you have Brandon McCoy.
No.
And if I'm going to go for an outsider, I don't know, Hayden Dalton perhaps, but from what I've seen so far, and I'm going to look at more data as well, like go through those years, but from this first week, I would say it's going to be somebody from either Boise, UNLV, or Nevada, but you got to finish top two because there's 20 times this award has been handed out to a couple co-players of the years. There's been 18, so two of them. All but two finish first or second. So unless you have an amazing season, like let's say McCoy goes, UNLV finishes fourth, and he averages, say, 22-12. He could maybe win it.
Do you think the fact that UNLV was just atrocious last year, he comes in and completely transformed the team, do you think that could potentially help out his voting a little bit?
I would think so. But also think about, too, how many other players do they bring in as well, not just him. Like Javon Mooring's now eligible and all those transfers that came in, too. No, I think there's a little bit to that as well, but because they were that bad last year, but it's not like they say they – brought in one or two guys, maybe graduated with one or two. It's almost the same team. This is a completely different team. But I think that mm-hmm. will still be in the mind. Oh, they're that bad, but this guy's doing this, and he's a freshman. But so far from what I've seen, it's going to be, if I'm going to pick, it's going to be Caleb Martin, Hutchinson, or it could be McCoy. But that's just after 1 week. I'm going to look at next week, like, what am I planning next week? Let's look at every statistical category from each winner. So, like, I'm going to average, like, Jensen and Douglas will balance each other on points per game. Or Jimmer Fredette scoring 30 points per game and averaging compared to everybody else. So that's something to look at next. But right now, basically, you got to be a guard and be on the top two team. That's the basics I've seen so far. And so that really means just what Hutchinson fits at, basically. Mm-hmm. So maybe.
Yeah, and he came in with all the preseason player of the year votes, too. Mm-hmm. So maybe that could account for something as well.
Could be, but that's what I've seen. But I'm going to do something every week, like average points. I'm going to look back at that season with Douglas, look at some, like you said, with Jensen that 1 year where he scored 13 points and was the player of the year. So I'm going to look at – where did you find those numbers as well real quick, just so everybody else can look at it, plus myself? Were you at Sports Reference?
Yeah, Sports Reference. If you just go to the Mountain West Conference Index, you'll have all of the 19 seasons up there, and they have Player of the Years listed to the right, so it's really easy to
find. So I took the long way to look this up. I went year by year.
Man.
So you went to...
I should have sent you a couple links.
Dang it. You went to Play Index, you said?
Or Play... It's if you go into Sports Reference, I mean, you can go on the top and just type Nevada or something so you can get to the Mountain West page.
Yeah, I'm on the Mountain West page for 2000-2001.
Okay, so then you can go and click on Mountain West Conference Index. So that should be highlighted to the left. And then once you get into that page, it will show all of the seasons, and you can go in and directly click.
Yeah, I took a longer way to get there than I did. I was on Wikipedia. That gave me the same thing. Maybe my stats what I was looking at. But no, that's good to know. That's a little bit better info. So, yeah, you got Lee Kamara, Jared Giddens. But, yeah, we're going to look in through and see. Oh, the regular season champ. Okay, there's some tri-champs, which makes a few things different. Like when McKelly Wesley won in 2000, 2001, three teams tied. So, but, yeah, we'll keep looking for that. I'll find out a unique way to look at who could qualify this week. But here's one guy. If we're going to go for a Ruben Douglas type year, who's the best player in San Jose State at the moment? Is it what's his name?
Yeah, Ryan Whalage.
Whalage.
Gotta be your go-to guy.
What is he average? What is he average so far? He's only about 15 per game, right? Something like that?
He's averaging a bit more than that. Last time I checked, I think it was around 17. I'm getting to it right
now.
There
we go,
he's
yeah.
He's at 18.3 points per game.
So if you're going to have a guy on the outside like him, I would even say maybe Hayden Dalton might be that fringe guy. I would say if you can get to if Wellich is going to get it, he's going to average at least like 27 per game, like a double-double somehow on any category.
Yeah, I can't see that one happening.
I'm just saying. But that
Hayden Dalton, I think so, because he would already have two Player of the Year awards after this next Monday, and you'd only be one of two players in the conference to do that alongside Brandon McCoy. So
he's more the outsider that could get it than anybody else, I'm thinking. When I mean outsider, I mean based off what I've seen first or second place finish. Because, well, I mean, honestly, they're probably not going to be that, but they're going to be a thorn in everybody's side. Because they already beat San Diego State, so.
I think Wyoming could realistically go 9-0 at home and 9-9 on the road this year.
The ultimate.
It's possible.
You think so?
Who's
your road game?
This team struggles on the road. I looked at their road games, and they're not too easy either. So they have at Nevada.
Okay.
At New Mexico, at Utah State, at San Jose State. That's at San Jose State and at New Mexico are probably the ones that they can win. Besides that, they're at Colorado State, at UNLV, at San Diego State, at Fresno, and at Boise.
I can see them winning three of those. CSU.
They could lose. they could win every game at home, and they could probably lose every game on the road. I mean, San Jose State, they'll probably win that game. New Mexico, they'll probably win that game. And CSU would also have them favored in that one.
They don't go to Air Force?
But all the other ones, they should probably lose. No, they don't go to Air Force.
Dang it.
So that'll be interesting to see. But so far, they did have that unusual home loss in Northern Colorado. But besides that, they've been solid at home and a bit questionable on the road. So we'll see.
All right, let's get to the game real quick this weekend because we don't need to go extremely long here. We're already at 50 minutes. But we got games on Saturday. We have I'm trying to pull up the exact schedule to know some TV stuff here. But everybody's in action but Wyoming, because I'm pretty safe to say it's going to be Dalton Player of the Week. So we're going to start making our own awards list to look for that Sunday afternoon, because we're going to beat the league and have the Premier Player of the Week award. I'll call it right now. I'll say it. So what game are you looking forward to? Because the game started at about 1 Pacific, or 2 Pacific, go through 8 Pacific, essentially. Every game, interesting, is a West Coast time.
Interesting.
Reno,
the one that I'm definitely looking at is Boise State UNLV.
That's clearly the game. That's on. If you get AT&T Sports Network, check it out. If not, you can stream it maybe on the Watch Stadium app. Again, I stress maybe because I'm not sure how that app works at the moment, or have all football season either. but that could determine a lot of things in the conference with what McCoy and Hutchinson, maybe the top two players in the league. What will UNLV do at home? Because they've been better at home than the road, clearly, because overtime Arizona on the road, overtime NIU, or UNI, excuse me. Boise beat Oregon on the road, so they've already had a pretty good matchup. I think this game, like you're correct, could be one that, I know we can do the hyperbole, oh, it's an important game, but like you said before, November 10th and December 31st are going to be equally as important for the most part, if not more, depending on who you're playing. But this is going to be a big game that could set the stage for either team. I'd say it's more important for UNLV than Boise State, because Boise's already had this experience and being a good team for the past 3 or 4 years, whereas UNLV, they've been tested, but they've lost both their tests so far this year.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I think these teams match up pretty closely with one another. They both have size in the front court. When they do take their threes, they're pretty efficient. Tempos will be a bit of an interesting facet to the game, because Boise likes to slow it down. UNLV will be running, of course. But it'll be an excellent matchup, and I mean, for sure, whoever loses this game, you can knock them out of that large hopes if you haven't already. But it's just a massive game between two teams that should probably finish top three in the league. I'm curious how UNLV defends Boise State on the perimeter, because as we know, the Broncos have a ton of shooters, but UNLV has just done an excellent job defending the three ball this year. On the boards, that'll be interesting as well, because UNLV, they've had their struggles the defensive rebounding side, and that's something that Boise State does pretty well. And Boise State also excellent defensive rebounding team. Actually, looking right now, they lead the entire country in defensive rebounding percentage, so they don't give up a lot of offensive looks for the opponents. So UNLV could have a really difficult time scoring second chance buckets, but yeah, this one should go down to the wire. I think it'll be a fun one.
So who's going to guard Brandon McCoy then? Because I've made the assertion earlier, one of our shows, that he's got to play zone on him. Don't double him, but play an actual zone where you can essentially double him. Because here's what you can do with the zone. You can be comfortable in the zone because, oh, I got just one guy behind me. But then it's depending what they do, whether it's the variation could make a difference. And I think it's going to make him be uncomfortable the whole game, and I think that's the way to do it. I bet they could do a matchup. Like, I think they'll do a mix of that defense throughout the game, as particularly if he starts going off. But I think what Boise's going to do, they're not going to adjust to him. They're going to play whatever their normal defense is for at least the first timeout, the first four, and then they'll make some changes. I think that's the best way, because why make yourself uncomfortable when you should play your own thing and then maybe change later if it's not working?
I think that's probably the wise thing to do. And Boise State, it's not foreign for them to switch into the zone. They've done that a number of times. They did their last time out against Colorado State. So they do have experience playing in a zone, and it's been, for the most part, effective. So if they are having trouble defending McCoy and Justin down low, they could potentially switch into the 2-3 like they have. And, I mean, 2-3 zone is occasionally problematic for grabbing those defensive boards, but that's something that Boise State does better than anyone in the country right now. So I think they'd probably be comfortable switching into a 2-3 zone if they need to, but otherwise they'll defend straight up, and they should have a pretty good counter for the UNLV offense.
Yeah, it's just what I want to see, because if you can rebound great, like they do, like if you switch up a defense, you maybe not play all the time, it's... they'll be okay. So real quick, I say that a lot. Real quick, I should stop doing that. But ESPN's BPI index, have you looked at that yet for this game?
I haven't. No, let's put the fun part of the show where I look terrible at my prediction.
It's okay. So that with Matt, I make an outrageous comment just because I know it's completely wrong to hear him laugh. because typically if we bring this up, you know it's going to be some sort of extreme. Not extremity. Mm-hmm. Not extremity. That's like a hand or a foot. An extreme. I'm not feeling great. I need some more cough medicine. This past hour has been getting to me, talking too much. But UNLV is at home, so you're probably assuming they're the favorite. What is the matchup predictor favored UNLV by? Or the percentage of victory, because that's how they label it here.
All right. So for a quick flashback, I predicted that. That Gonzaga would be an 86% favorite over San Diego State. That one didn't quite pan out.
That was what, like 60? So almost really a toss-up. Wasn't that like 57%?
I think it might have been even lower than that, honestly.
Okay, so what is the...
So
what
I'm playing with house money right now because I have nothing to lose. I think that UNLV is 54%.
Nope.
Is Boise favored?
No. UNLV is favored a 70-30.
What?
For UNLV.
Man, I can't predict this BPI. Usually I feel like I have a decent feeling about how certain formulas work. But man, there's something about BPI that I'm just not figuring out right now. I don't know if I see UNLV as a 70% favorite. I think Boise State has a pretty good shot just based on styles alone and how the teams match up with one another.
All right, so we probably should mention the other games because we've kind of went off the track talking about midseason stuff because that's fun too. But here's who's playing this weekend because let's give a quick winners really quick. So you got CSU versus San Jose State on the road. I believe we're both going to go with the Rams.
Yes.
Okay. If you want to go to this game in person, if you want to burn $34, you're able to do so, but I'd recommend against it.
$34 to get into the door?
That's what it says here, yeah.
No. How are they going to get 100 people there?
Guess what? If you go to our show notes, we'll have a Geek Seat code in there. I won't guarantee because I'm not looking at it, but I'm pretty sure if you want to go to that game, click on that link and find tickets to this game. It'll be cheaper, and it'll help us out too. So,
$34 to get in to see a 7-7 Colorado State team?
Would you like to know what it costs to get into Boise versus UNLV?
I don't want to guess because it's just – I have no idea.
$15.
What? Okay, that doesn't
– I could spend less money – driving to that game and purchasing a ticket than if had I live in San Jose area and go to that game. I could take the 6-hour drive, which is one tank of gas, which is 20. Well, okay, it'd be basically the same amount of money because a full tank of gas for my car is about $25. Okay, I might spend a few more dollars, but the entertainment value would easily exceed that.
and this is exactly why there will be 10 times as many people in Las Vegas and in San Jose State on Saturday for those basketball games.
No kidding, but Rams to win that one. Nevada at New Mexico, New Mexico at Nevada could be somewhat interesting. Let's see what the they don't have the pick summary here. Dang it! I wish I could pull that up, but that's probably my number two game. That's the game it kicks off, or not? I'm sorry, football season here. Sorry, 2 p.m. Pacific time. I'm not going to have you guess it, but BPI, 94% chance for Nevada. 94%.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't think New Mexico stands a chance.
Then we got Air Force, Fresno. Fresno should win. Okay, what do you think is a higher winning percentage? Nevada over New Mexico or Fresno over Air Force?
I would say Fresno over Air Force.
Oh, hold on. Barely by what percentage point?
Ooh, there we go. Okay, I got the feel of the BPI now. I'm ready.
All right, then what do you
bring on San Diego State, Utah State?
Okay, that game tips at ESPN3. So put on your Chromecast or whatever. 7 p.m. Pacific. What do you got? What
I have a guess percentage.
Yeah, it's percentage based. Yeah.
Okay, I'll guess San Diego State at 71%.
Closer, 79%.
Oh, okay.
You're getting there. You're figuring it out a little bit. BPI is a funky, funky beast.
I think it likes home teams.
Yes, that would make sense. Like every metric should like home teams. That's true. They really like UNLV for some reason to Thomas and Mack. Really quick, I did it again. Shoot, sorry, folks. What's the upset you'd pick that's most likely to happen out of these games?
Well, it would probably have to be a home team. So, but then again, most of the teams that are playing at home this week should be favored.
They are, as we've gone through BPI.
Maybe San Jose State beating Colorado State, if you want to call it one an upset.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, Colorado State just does not have an offense that I am liking right now. Okay. They just did not look good against Boise. And San Jose State doesn't have much of an offense either, so that could be like a win 60 or score 60 points and win type game.
I'm gonna throw cold water. Spartans are a favorite. Okay. Spartans are the favorite to win.
Wow,
we didn't do this one.
So that's not even upset.
What's the BPI? Because we didn't discuss this one. This is a fun game.
51-49.
62-38.
San Jose State 62% over Colorado State.
Yeah,
there is something I'm just not understanding about this.
Do you have Ken Palm's line for this game up, or any of them up at the moment?
I do. San Jose State's expected to lose by 2 to Colorado State. Nevada's favored by 17 over New Mexico.
Oh boy.
UNLV is favored by 2 over Boise. San Jose State's favored by 10 over Utah State. See, these are the kind of lines that I would come to expect.
This is a this will be a season long thing we're doing. Guess to BPI, Eli.
And it also has the win percentage projections on here too. So there are definitely some differences in that.
Okay, and I assume that's the paid version of KenPom.
It is.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, Eli forks over the big money for that stuff.
Oh yeah, just paid up my $20 a couple days.
$20. Hey, no, that's a good deal if you get it.
It's worth the money. If I can make $20 off writing articles, then it's worth the subscription.
No kidding. Yeah, exactly. So here's what we're kind of our schedule are going to be. Are we going to do this twice a week? Or are we going to go once a week? Do we need to figure this out off air?
Yeah, that's probably wiser.
So really quick,
we'll figure it out.
If we don't broadcast again or ever show. Next game is Tuesday, January 2nd. So probably not going to, because I don't think we're going to do a New Year's Eve show, because that's kind of lame. Just because, I don't know, I'm going to stick basketball that much, but I'm going to say no. There won't be a show anyway, so I'll say right now, there's not going to happen. But you got Aztecs at the Rams real quick on Tuesday and Wednesday. It's just super quick. We're not going to do our fun stuff before, but New Mexico at Boise, Fresno at Utah State, Wyoming at Nevada, UNLV at San Jose State. Something's up with the Spartans home court, because they're also a $29 ticket when they host UNLV.
How do you expect to get anyone in the gym when you're 3-9, you're charging $30 to see teams that are at 500? That's like what Washington does when they're hosting Bethune-Cookman.
I don't know. At least we have Anna there, gets it for free, so that's helpful. That's I don't know. But I'm just saying, at least she doesn't have to pay $30 to go. Jeez.
I would hope not. I would tell her not to go.
Yeah, I would say no. Come do on. Not go. Stay. So that's a couple of games, but we'll probably go once, maybe twice a week. We'll see how it goes down the road. So again, we're not CBS guys. Those guys go three times a week, but they also talk about 350 teams.
Yeah, more to talk about.
Exactly. All right, so that's our show for today. Hope you enjoy it. Check out the Hoops games. We'll have all previews, recaps, all sorts of fun stuff upcoming on basketball. We're doing some videos, so we'd appreciate if you look at our videos and.
We're pivoting to video.
No, we're not pivoting. We are complimenting with video.
I like it.
Complimenting.
It's what Fox Sports should have done.
Oh, jeez. Don't get me started with them. They're terrible. But we're working on a few things that it might autoplay with sound. We're trying to fix that. But here's the upside. Our videos themselves are more like kind of a slideshow video type thing. There'll be some highlights, but we're probably not going to talk over them or do any music or anything really, just because you don't need that stuff. But the ads at the moment, unfortunately, play sound. But if you just click mute and let it run still, we'd still appreciate that a lot.
They'll figure it out.
And if you click on the ad, that'd be nice too. Awesome. But we'll do a couple videos here. Like, we're going to do a Player of the Week video and stuff like that, highlights and more things like that. So look out for that stuff. MW Wire on the good old, Facebook?
Interwebs.
Oh. Also, if you want to comment with us, I never mentioned this before because... For some reason, comments aren't really set up on our site. For some reason, if you want to drop us a comment, go to our Facebook page, Mountain West Wire. You can comment it on our articles or links. Because I know before we get a decent amount of interaction. Twitter, we get that as well. But if you want to go to the Facebook page, leave a comment there on the article we wrote about. And maybe Eli. I know Eli doesn't use Facebook because he hates it for some reason. But I myself,
I do, yes.
Oh, okay, I was just kidding, but you probably do. It took you 3 months to like our page recently.
I know. I log on Facebook maybe monthly. So
I log on. I'm not good with that. I log on to post articles for my jobs. That's the only reason I really use it. But yeah, leave a comment there, chat about it, and give us a heads up, an idea of what you want to see, maybe for the Player of the Year post. I want to try to do something every week that's interesting and maybe unique. So if you find something, maybe it's a good performance or some angle you want me to look at. Hopefully,
or just any post in general. If you have any ideas, stuff that we want to write, just go for it, because we're always open for new ideas and want to write stuff that you want to read.
Exactly. So if there's anything, not just what I'm working on, selfish, I guess, but anything no. Like. And also for those who are yelling at me right now, where's your freaking Utah State writer? We're working on it. We know. We understand that there is a void. And last year, our football preview podcast, Utah State was the most downloaded by far. So. We get it. We got you.
Supply and demand.
We're working on it. We'll figure it out. We got a few guys who could be coming over, but that's it. Check out Eli, Betker _ Eli, myself, Jeremy Moss. No, I'm not going to say that joke because that's lame and that's mean. So MWWire.com is our website. So check us out there. And of course, we'll see you next time, folks.